From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in December of 1939. A group of students were gathered outside on a snowy day, and as kids sometimes do, they were egging one another on. It was a dare, and then a double dare, then a double dog dare, and boy, it escalated beyond there. You know, the etiquette says the next is a triple dare and then a triple dog dare, but that's not what Schwartz did. They went straight to the triple dog dare, and young Flick had to go through with it, sticking his tongue to a bare metal pole. A classic scene from a classic holiday film. For me, anyway. I don't know about you. A Christmas Story, one of the best. For some, it's the best holiday film of all time. For others, I call them blasphemers. It's overrated. This hour, we're discussing the best and the worst holiday films. We're also going to talk about films that our guests enjoyed from 2015. So the best of 2015, the best and worst of all time, and let me welcome my guests. Jack Garner's here, Gannett film critic who has failed retirement because I see your byline all the time. You're supposed to be retired.
I know. My wife says, oh, when are you going to get retired?
Some retirement.
Exactly. But I love it. And I only do what I have at least reached the point where I only do what I want to do, and I will never have to see a Transformers film as long as I live. So, you know, or whatever, you know.
That's bliss for
50 Shades of Gray Part 6. I don't have to go, you know.
Yeah, that's great. And A Christmas Story, a classic or?
No, it is definitely a classic. I got to correct you on one little thing, if you don't mind.
Okay.
It was a little later than 1939. It was around 1959, the 1950s. It's in the 50s.
Oh, I better go back and do my
And because, first of all, I identified right with it because I'm from that era, too, as a child, you know. And my parents also warned me about putting my eye out with a BB gun, but they still got me one. I guess they didn't care.
Also here with us for the hour is Les Friedman. He's a professor in the Media and Society program at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Christmas Story for you, classic or overrated?
No, absolutely a classic. And my parents warned me about running with a fork. You know, that was the other one.
I love Gene Shepard.
Fabulous.
I read his stuff before.
Did
that
he
movie
narrate?
Came out.
Was that his voice narrating?
That's his voice narrating. And he even has a very small cameo, I think, as a guy in line to see Santa Claus. You remember when they had that long line of getting
The
to
worst
see Santa
ever. And the most horrifying. I mean, my son doesn't like any Santa Claus. He doesn't like people in costume, but that Santa would have scared even me. So.
I don't know. Billy Bob Thornton is a pretty bad Santa, too, in his film.
He was a bad Santa.
Well, that was
Santa.
Kind of the point.
Yeah, I know.
So before we get to our favorite holiday films of all time, or at least what our our guests think of certain movies. Let's talk a little bit about what's out now and what's going on. And Hollywood loves to do big releases Christmas week. I guess they know people are off. It's your chance to get together with family, go out and see it. So I know you've both seen Star Wars.
Right.
I was this close to going to the 11 p.m. last night to finally see it. But Jack?
No, I thought, as I've written, Star Wars sort of runs parallel to my life. I mean, first film I reviewed professionally was Star Wars, the first one. And I was perceptive enough, I'm proud to say, to suggest it could probably use a sequel. I love those films. I know all the bad parts of them. I know that they can be wooden at times with the acting, and I know the dialogue can be trite and all that. But I think that they have occasionally, I think the first one was just good fun, and it was well-made good fun. The second one was really good. It went a little darker and had some really interesting threads in it, and it's the best one. The third one was okay, but I thought the teddy bears were too cute. And then after the later ones, which are actually the earlier ones, very confusing, that numbering system, were not as good as the first three that were released. And then this new one is in league with those first three, especially the first two. I would say it's even maybe only second to The Empire Strikes Back.
So you really enjoyed it.
Well, it really connects with all the threads. And as they were saying, the critics, when they were on the Diane Rehm show a couple hours ago, did say that in a lot of ways echoes the first film, and that's kind of true. I mean, there is the father-son thing.
And by the way, I guess I have to do this.
No spoilers.
No big spoilers.
No. I'm not going to give you any.
Okay, but is it too much of an echo?
No, I think it's respectful, I would call it. And I think it's part of the fun of it. And they don't just echo the first film. There's some echoes of Empire. There are different things they echo. But, you know, there are certain films that are kind of like franchises that we go for new stuff, and we'd like to think. But in truth, we really love the old stuff. I mean, I'm not going to go to a Bond movie that doesn't have dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum and Miss Moneypenny and all that stuff. You know, it's to be – and the Austin cars and the martini shaken, not stirred. These are all things you want. And it's the same with Star Wars. There are certain things you do want, and they're there. But there's also some new stuff, too. I thought it was very good.
Okay, Les?
You know, it's interesting because J.J. Abrams, the director, I think had a really – tough task here because he was really rebooting the franchise, and it almost is like a pilot. And pilots are notorious for being stodgy because you have to have a lot of background information. But what he did, I thought, was quite brilliant in the sense that he merged all of the things, as Jack was talking about, that we want to see. I mean, I saw it last night at 9 o'clock, and when Han Solo first appeared, that's not a giveaway. We all know he's in it.
Okay.
The audience cheered. The audience absolutely cheered. And yet, here we have a whole raft of new characters and obviously a setup for a new franchise. So I think as a piece of combining old and new, merging what we want and still whet our appetite for new things, I think the film works really, really well. And he did it with Star Trek also.
Yeah, he booted Star Trek as well.
Yeah, he rebooted it.
The other thing I love, one of the things I love about it, well, first of all, I want to say in terms of connecting to the older stuff, his chief writer on this was Lawrence Kasdan.
Right.
Who's a really fine filmmaker in his own writing about The Big Chill and a lot of other stuff. And he wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark. So the guy knows how to deal with these kind of fantasy adventures that Spielberg and Lucas come up with.
And Raiders was, for me, the best of that group.
Yeah.
The best of that group.
I like the last one. Like Indiana last Jones. Yeah.
As long as you don't say
Temple. No, not the last one. Indiana Jones with the father.
The one with Sean Connery.
Yeah, the one with Sean Connery. Yeah,
but I like the first one. Yeah. The first one to me is unbelievable. But anyway, so he wrote, so he got a good writer. I also want to put a little props here for what I think is the great secret weapon of the Star Wars films. And at 83 years old, he's still doing it, and that's John Williams.
Absolutely.
The score, and it's not just the same. He just didn't pull it off the rack. There is a really new twist to the themes, and it's a great, great score. And that's a big part of those films, of that music.
Yeah, he obviously earned his recognition for that first set of films here. And for me, it's a reminder of how valuable a great score can be. Sometimes it's subtle and sometimes it's in your face and everybody knows it.
The other thing about John Williams is I always want to give him credit for is that he brought back, because it was fading away, he brought back the concept of the symphonic score, the Korn Gold kind of scores for Robin Hood and that kind of a music, or Jerry Goldsmith, that kind of stuff was fading away. And if you remember, a lot of the films in the 60s were using existing music, rock and roll, and even Scorsese was using opera and whatever. And Williams says, no, let's go back to symphonies. And he did that, all those symphonic scores that are fabulous.
And we remember him for unbelievable things. I mean, who doesn't know the theme song from Jaws?
Right. You can't put your toe in the ocean without hearing
it. Right. That's absolutely right. Absolutely.
And by the way, people may want to know one of my little favorite pieces of trivia. He was a young piano player in the studio system working for Henry Mancini, and he is the pianist on the music from Peter Gunn.
Oh, that is a great piece.
He was credited as Johnny Williams.
Johnny Williams.
All right, well, let's start to work through our favorite films of the year. And by the way, I know Jack mentioned on the Diane Rehm show, they talked movies today. We had this booked before Diane Rehm, and sometimes, Connections gets copied, even maybe by the Diane Rehm show. I'm mostly kidding. I don't think they actually did. It's just a coincidence today, but we're having fun on Christmas week. It's a big week for people to get out and see films and maybe to take the time to go watch a film that was out earlier this year. I loved Spotlight, and that was one of the few I got to see this year, and I got to see it because I helped moderate a panel when it showed at the Little Theater. So I'm going to start with Jack Garner. Spotlight as a film, it's getting Oscar buzz. Does it deserve it?
For sure. It may be my favorite film of the year. It's at least top three or four. It's really, really, first as a journalist, this is the one that gets it right. The only one that gets it right since All the President's Men, which I think also got it right, largely.
And for me, as someone who's worked in journalism my entire career, I love the fact that they didn't put any silly love stories. They didn't sort of embellish or make these ridiculous hero characters. The process was the star.
It was life in a newsroom. It was just the way it is, the way they dress, the way they behave, the way they interact with each other. I also like the fact that they never once went on the cheap. By that I mean they never have anything that's gratuitous. There's not a single scene. I warn people of this because there are people who are scared to go. I will tell you right now, there's not a single moment in this film where a priest is saddling up to an altar boy.
Right. It's not
there. They talk about it. It's a serious issue, but they don't show it. So people should know that, and it's a really good movie.
Yeah, Les? Well,
yeah, I thought two things about it. First of all, tremendous hard work it takes to do a story like this, and it showed what it was. And also, the pressures when you're so engaged, like Michael Keaton, the central character in a community, and you have to go against the mores of that community, you have to tell the secrets of that community to the world. Very, very, very tough. And the second thing, of course, is, and someone mentioned it this morning on Diane Rehm, was that it's sad that these kind of groups of reporters, investigative reporters, it's fading out.
Yeah,
as our print newspapers fading out to some extent. So it's almost a nostalgia piece as well.
Which is a horrifying thought.
Horrifying.
Because it's only 14 years later for it to be a nostalgia piece.
Right.
Yikes, a lot has changed. Let's listen to a clip from it. This is a clip from the movie Spotlight. This is actor Mark Ruffalo. He plays Mike Resendez, a reporter. And this is the point where the reporter thinks we finally have enough. It's time to print. It's time to run the story and tell the world about the Boston Archdiocese, Cardinal Law, and the cover-up of dozens of priests abusing children. And you're going to hear Michael Keaton, his editor, his boss, his colleague, pushing back a little bit on when it's time to run it. Let's listen.
We got law. This is it.
No, this is law covering for one priest. There's another 90 out there.
Yeah, and we'll print that story when we get it, but we got to go with this now.
No, I'm not going to rush the story, Mike.
We don't have a choice, Robbie. If we don't rush to print, somebody else is going to find these letters and butcher this story. Joe Quimby from the Herald was at the freaking courthouse.
Mike.
What? Why are we hesitating? Barron told us to get law. This is law.
Barron told us to get the system. We need the full scope. That's the only thing that will put an end to this.
Then let's take it up to Ben. Let him decide.
We'll take it to Ben when I say it's time.
It's time, Robbie. It's time. They knew, and they let it happen to kids. Okay? It could have been you. It could have been me. It could have been any of us. We got to nail these scumbags. We got to show people that nobody can get away with this. Not a priest or a cardinal or a freaking pope.
That is Mark Ruffalo playing Mike Resendez, and that's a really supercharged scene, the most supercharged that I can recall in the film. The rest of the film is not like that, which is why I thought that scene was so powerful. They were processed, they were working it, but that was a powerful moment that it came out.
Jared? That was very powerful and very strong. The other favorite scene of mine in terms of emotional power is when the young female reporter knocks on the door of the old retired priest who has gotten a little dowdy. I mean, I don't think he's quite all there. And he admits everything except he says it doesn't matter because I didn't get off on it. As if that made a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a sick
it
moment.
It is a sick moment.
But it's a fascinating film, and it is, I felt very real to me as a journalist. I think everybody in any one profession, I don't care what the profession is, you see a movie about your profession, you start nitpicking. But I couldn't nitpick this at all.
It was very difficult to find. I think there was maybe one moment, if I really want to get pedantic, but really, really well done film. So that's Spotlight. Another film that a lot of people are talking about is Brooklyn. I have not seen Brooklyn. Les?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, actually, given my own ethnic heritage, when I think Brooklyn, I think Jewish, not Irish.
But, or Italian, which is the number two one in there.
That's right.
And what's the story of the film?
Well, the story of the film is a young girl who comes from Ireland as an immigrant. She has a job. Interestingly enough, we were just talking about Spotlight. This girl is befriended and brought over by a priest, by a family priest. So in this case, the system is working quite well. And you really get it's a pitch perfect period piece. I said those four P's very carefully. but it is. And I asked Jack earlier because I thought he knew, and maybe he does know. I'm sorry to say I cannot say her first name.
I think it's something like Sarche or something. It's an Irish name, a Gaelic
it's a
name.
Very Gaelic name.
Sarche, the young girl who plays it. She looks like she's right off the boat.
And the face of Ireland.
She's done other films, but this she just is so good.
We've got to have an Irish listener who knows how to pronounce the name.
Please.
Is spelled S-A-O-I-R-S-E. Sorsa Ronan.
Right. Right,
Ronan.
She's wonderful.
Ms. Ronan.
Yeah, there you go.
Ms. Ronan.
This is the best romance of the year. I mean, if you're going to go to if you're the kind of person that says I got to have a romance, it's a beautiful romance without any of the trite craziness of some romances. This is just an honest story of people trying to find their place in life.
Well, and we've got a clip from the film. Ellis is discussing being homesick with Father Flood, who is helping her assimilate, and let's listen to a clip from Brooklyn.
I'd forgotten just how bad it feels to be away from home. I've enrolled you in a night class for bookkeeping at Brooklyn College. It'll be three nights a week, and I paid your tuition for the first semester.
Why?
Why? No, thank you.
Sorry, thank you. But why?
Well, I was amazed that someone as clever as you couldn't find proper work at home. I've been here too long. I forget what it's like in Ireland. So when your sister wrote to me about you, I said the church would try to help. Anyway, we need Irish girls in Brooklyn.
I wish that I could stop feeling that I want to be an Irish girl in Ireland.
All I can say is that it will pass. Homesickness is like most sicknesses. It'll make you feel wretched, and it'll move on to somebody else.
What I found really interesting about this film, and again, not trying to give away anything, but having moved myself from my hometown, the pull of your hometown, even when you romanticize it a decade or so later, is very, very, very strong. And you see that pull working on her in opposition to some extent to the new life that she might have. And it's done with two different romances, as Jack was talking about.
Yeah, there's a boy in each port.
There's a boy in each port. My wife had read the book, and I went with her to the movie, and she said, oh, they're going to change it. They're going to make it syrupy. And we got done. I said, what'd you think? She said, it was perfect. It was just perfect to the
Beautifully
book.
Acted. By the way, I want to give a little credit to the actor playing that priest. If you recognize that voice, that's the great English character actor, Jim Broadbent.
Right.
Who's been in a lot of stuff.
And is there going to be Oscar buzz for this film?
Oh, for sure. The girl, for sure.
For sure. However her name is, she's going to get it. We'll know.
A lot of people think she might just actually get the whole darn thing, get the Oscar.
That's
good. Wonderful. Oh,
she's wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah. All right. Another film on the list is Trumbo. Again, I see a lot of kids' movies. I haven't seen Trumbo.
It's a film lover's movie. I mean, not that other people
and a political
enjoy it,
historian kind
and
of
it
movie.
And it is a political
the McCarthy
story.
Era.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll start with a clip here. My understanding is here's the story of the film. 1947, and screenwriter Dalton Trumbo, played by Bryan Cranston.
Right.
And I can't wait to hear what our panelists think about him because he was obviously fabulous in Breaking Bad. So Dalton Trumbo and other Hollywood figures get blacklisted for their political beliefs, and Trumbo tells the story of his fight against the U.S. government and studio bosses in a war over words and freedom, and it entangles everyone in Hollywood from Hedda Hopper, John Wayne, Kirk Douglas. And in this clip, Trumbo is agreeing with Arlen Herd, played by Louis C.K., that he talks like a radical, but he lives like a rich guy, and that's the best combination to cause change.
No, you know what it is? I don't trust you.
Well, I'd say go on, but I'm afraid you will.
Look, I know what I am, okay? I want this whole country to be different, top to bottom. If I get what I want, nobody gets their own lake.
Well, that would be a very dull life.
Yeah,
you think?
For you, not for the guys who built this. If I'm wrong, tell me, but ever since I've known you, you talk like a radical, but you live like a rich guy.
That is true.
Well, I don't know that you're, I don't think you're willing to lose all of this just to do the right thing.
Well, I despise martyrdom. And I won't fight for a lost cause. So you're right. I'm not willing to lose it all. Certainly not them. But I am willing to risk it all. That's where the radical and the rich guy make a perfect combination. The radical may fight with the purity of Jesus. But the rich guy wins with the cunning of Satan. What?
Just please shut up.
Sorry there, Louis C.K. I didn't mean to step on your line.
Yeah.
No, this is a wonderful film, and the reason he's a rich guy, by the way, is he's the best writer in Hollywood. He wrote The Roman Holiday, which won an Oscar. He's written a lot of other great screenplays, and he had to do what a lot of people had to do in those days. In fact, Woody Allen made a good movie. He didn't direct it, but he starred in a movie called The Front, which was about the same idea of writers that would get other people to submit their Smith scripts for them, but they really wrote, and they'd be credited to other names. Couple characters that show up really interestingly in this movie. One is Edward G. Robinson, and the other is Kurt Douglas, and they're both major factors in the story, and they're both really, really wonderfully portrayed. It's
How is Cranston as Trumbo?
Fabulous. Well, he's one of the great actors. I mean, I really do think he is one of our great actors.
Yeah, Les?
Oh, absolutely. I enjoyed this very, very much, having studied that period as well. And Jack's right. It is about political bravery. And he does have a lot to lose, and he loses it to some extent. Mm-hmm. And
there's some time in the slammer. I don't want to give too much away, but he does go to the slammer.
And he also is influential in I mean, this is historical, so I don't think it's giving
it
away.
That's why I was safe to
announce. Yeah, in breaking the list.
Oscar buzz for this film?
I don't know how what audience it will find.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Cranston maybe, and maybe there's some talk about who they always talk about Helen Mirren. She plays Hedda Hopper, and she's juicy in this thing. But I don't. It's interesting. I think it's going to be a horse that's going to show up in the race, but I don't know if it's going to cross the finish line.
Right.
But we'll see.
It's a good question.
But Cranston has really, Jack. You really think he's carved out a place for himself as considered one of the great actors of this generation?
Yes, I think so. I was first turned on to him of all people by Marilyn O'Connor, the former Fremont Court judge, who's quite an observer of film and the mother of Phil Hoffman, so she knows about good acting. And she told me years ago some other movie, small part he had in the movie, just watch this guy. And she's right. This guy.
It's interesting to watch a career. I was watching a rerun of Seinfeld the other day, and there he is as Tim Watley, the dentist, romancing Julia Louis-Dreyfus and doing it fabulously.
Well, maybe he's one of those types that you look back, even on his bit roles, that you look back years later and you say, every little thing he did, he nailed it.
But, yeah, he's no spring chicken. I mean, he's got to be 40s, I'm thinking.
Spring chicken? I haven't heard that expression in such a long time.
He may be 50. I don't know. But be interesting to see what he does. Okay, so before we turn to holiday films in the second half, other films that stand out to you, what are we going to start hearing more Oscar buzz for or less?
I'm going to, it's interesting to be in Rochester as opposed to New York. Now, Jack's very lucky. He gets these lovely screeners, so he sees things in advance. Like, we haven't seen Carol yet, which is getting, obviously, phenomenal buzz. But one thing I would like to put in the audience's mind to go and see, and Jack and I were talking about this earlier, is an English film called 45 or 45 Years, which is with Tom Courtney and Charlotte Rampling. And it's a couple who are about to celebrate their 45th wedding anniversary when he gets a revelation about a past romance that really shakes the foundations of their marriage. And both of these are fabulous actors. And Rampling in particular, you just watch her face and there's so much going on. And she's such a smart actress. And she's aged naturally. I mean, she's a beautiful woman that's aged naturally, as did Tom Courtney. So, I'd like listeners to be aware of that movie, which could slip in on little cat feed and slip out if you're not aware.
All right, the name of that film?
45.
And then I would recommend it, if I can do a quick little handful. Bridge of Spies has already come, and I think it may be gone, but it's going to be on DVD. And I thought it was Spielberg. It's one of his really great historic films. He does good history films. And I thought, and I think Mark Rylance, who plays the spy.
I think he'll get a nomination.
He'll get a nomination. She's a wonderful actor. I also liked I like Mad Max as an action film. You know, it's got a female action hero, which is unusual. Revenant is an interesting movie. Very rough, very violent. It's a mountain man in the 1820s who goes on a revenge trip when his son gets killed, and it's got some of the most amazing special effects. Everybody talks about special effects with space movies. There's a bear fight that lasts about 20 minutes, and I'm looking at this bear and this
bear
guy
fighting,
and I'm saying, how they do this? You know, I've been around this business for a long time, and yet I'm wondering how the heck they do this.
With an animal, Evan, not naked. Now, come on.
And then there's the Big Short, which is about the 2008 financial thing.
I want to see that. I read the book. The book was wonderful. Michael Lewis,
it's a good movie. It's got just enough humor to kind of keep you going because some of us glaze over when we talk finance, but it was really good.
I loved the book.
Yeah. And then finally, Room, which is an interesting movie about a boy and his mother who have been trapped in this room by similar to that Cleveland thing where those guys kept, guy kept those women in a basement.
Ariel Castor or something.
Yeah. Well, that's that kind of story. This woman has been held prisoner for a long time in the room. And she's a great actress too. And Brie Larson.
Brie Larson.
She's wonderful too.
And there's another film that came and went called I'll See You in My Dreams with Blythe Danner.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was really wonderful. I'd love to see her get another.
And one of my favorite character actors, who I swear when the movie comes along that's right for him, he will win an Oscar, and that's Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott.
Yeah, mine too. One of my favorites too.
He hasn't won an Oscar.
No.
I don't even think
he's
been
nominated.
Wow.
He's sort tiptoes around weird movies, but he's a wonderful actor.
Thanks to one of our listeners for filling us in on the pronunciation. Again, the Irish immigrant, the name S-A-O-I-R-S-E, and the pronunciation is Saoirse. Saoirse. Very good. Thanks, listener, for calling in and letting John, our engineer, know. Saoirse is that name.
I got a son named Liam. You think I would know that? But
I have a son named Ian. Think I would know it. So you know.
You may hear an actor named Liam in our second half hour. Uh-huh. He's been in Star Wars, but we're actually not going to listen to a clip from him from Star Wars. Different film. Let's get a short break. Talk holiday films, and when we come back, Jack Gunner's going to tell us a beautiful little story about planes, trains, and automobiles. And if you don't know the local connection, I love this story. That and more after this short break. And coming up on Wednesday on Connections, we're talking paid family leave. It's been a hot subject across the country. A number of other states are either looking at it or have adopted it. And some parts of the business community are concerned about how much it costs. Well, we're going to hear all angles on it. What would it take to get paid family leave in New York State? And who's pushing it? That conversation tomorrow on Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Go Public. It's a campaign about the future of WXXI in our community. Hello, I'm Rick Glazer. WXXI provides in-depth news, great music, and educational programming 365 days a year. You can help ensure the future of WXXI with a gift to our endowment through your will, retirement, or insurance plan. For more information on making a planned gift to the Go Public campaign through your estate, please contact Kathy Reed at 258-0319, and thank you.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our guests as we talk films, holiday films, the best films of 2015, and more. Les Friedman's a professor in the Media and Society program at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Jack Garner is a Gannett film critic, and you have a forthcoming column on these very subjects.
My column of the best of the year will be in Sunday's paper. They usually put it online a couple days early, so you might want to start looking at democratandchronicle.com, but it will be in the paper Sunday for sure.
I love the physical edition anyway.
I know.
I'm still a great physical edition.
Well, thank you for that.
You want to join the conversation? I see the phone ringing. If you want to join the conversation about holiday films, good and bad, as well as what you think might be Oscar-worthy this year, it's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI right here in Rochester, 263-9994. We don't have a clip from it, but one of my favorite films, I guess it's a Thanksgiving film, it's a holiday film, that's one of the holiday season films, is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with the late John Candy and Steve Martin. I love the film. I did not know until Jack enlightened me about a local connection.
Yes, when they shot that film, if you remember, there's a sequence when they're in the car phase of it. You know, they tell these different kinds of transportation, but they're in the car, beat up old car, and they're on the highway, and they're supposed to be like in Kansas somewhere. And they went out to Kansas to shoot it, or they checked on the weather or whatever, and they found out there's no snow in Kansas. So they want to go someplace where they can get some guaranteed snow. Upstate New York, they come over our way, and they work in the area where Interstate 90, the thruway, and those exits around Batavia. That's the area they worked in. Yeah. And there was even a story that one night in a pizzeria, and talk about a non sequitur in your life, you're sitting in a pizzeria in Batavia, New York. Who walks in the door and orders a pizza? John Candy. And he says, I'll buy a pizza from you if you let me go out back and make it myself. He probably wanted to do a Chicago style or something, because I think he's, I don't know, from that area or something. I don't know. But anyway, he went out and he threw it up in the air and all that stuff, and he had a pizza in Batavia, New York.
And there were no selfies at that time. That's right. No one got it.
No one got it.
Where's the proof? That's right.
That's right.
And I also love that movie. I think it's by far, it's not even close, I think it's by far John Hughes' best film. And I also think Candy, quite frankly, could have gotten an Oscar nomination, except they don't give them for those kind of movies.
No,
well,
they don't.
Well, I'm glad to not only to hear that our critic friends love that film, but that's a great story. And the pizza thing, though, that's not apocryphal?
Well, we ran in the paper at the time.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't write it, but we had an item in the paper about it.
Wow.
We had a couple of clips from some of the films here, and let's listen to the first holiday film on the list, John, top of the list there. Yeah, this is a film that I think it was pretty well diagnosed as a possible classic right when it came out, and I'm going to ask Jack and Les if they think it's holding up. This is the film Elf, Will Ferrell. This is him denouncing the gimbal Santa Claus, played by Artie Lang, as a fake.
Who the heck are you?
What are you talking about? I'm Santa Claus.
No, you're not.
Why, of course I am.
Well, if you're Santa, what song did I sing for you on your birthday this year?
Happy birthday, of course. How old are you, son?
Four.
You're a big boy. What's your name?
Paul.
And what can I get you for Christmas?
Don't tell him what you want. He's a liar.
Let the kid talk.
You disgust me. How can you live with yourself?
Just cool it, Zippy.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Look, I'm not kidding.
You're a fake.
I'm a fake?
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead? Huh? No, he's kidding.
You stink.
I think you're gonna have a good Christmas, all right?
You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.
Okay, go. He's a
monster! Will Ferrell playing Elf. Does it hold up, Jack?
Yeah, I think it's really funny. I mean, I laughed during that sequence that you played, and I'll be honest with you, among all the comedy actors of his generation, I'm not a huge fan of Will Ferrell. I don't think he always quite gets it right, but he does in this film. It's a fun film. It's not my favorite Christmas movie because I'm kind of old school, but it's fun.
Okay. Les?
No, I mean, who could, you know, deny Will Ferrell dressed as an elf running down the streets of New York City? I mean, absolutely true. An absolute classic. Still holds up.
Okay. Now, next I want to talk about the most controversial film on the list. John, it's the last clip on the list there. And this is one of those strange ones that actually inspires long-form articles delving into whether it's a great film or the worst film of all time. How odd that Love Actually inspires that much consternation in people. So here's a clip with Liam Neeson, who plays Daniel, and son Sam. Now, Sam has lost his mother and Liam Neeson's wife there, and they're talking about the agony that Sam has been feeling, but Liam Neeson's character doesn't quite know, is this about losing mom? Is this about something else? And he finds out what has been hurting Sam. Let's listen.
So, what's the problem, Sonny Ono? Is it just mom, or is it something else? Maybe school? Are you being bullied? Or is it something worse? Can you give me any clues, Bill?
You really want to know?
I really want to know.
Even though you won't be able to do anything to help?
Even if that's the case, yeah.
Okay. Well, truth is, actually, I'm in love.
Sorry?
I know I should be thinking about Mum all the time, and I am. But the truth is, I'm in love. And it was before she died, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Aren't you a bit young to be in love?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm a little relieved.
Why?
Well, because I thought it would be something worse.
Worse than the total agony of being in love.
No, you're right. Total agony.
Liam Neeson. So, Jack, the film, is it okay with you or no?
I love this film. In fact, I'm kind of surprised. I haven't heard that there's this controversial hate thing going on.
Oh, you'll find it online. It's quite strong. So, yeah.
Well, no, I thought it was very sweet, and I liked it a lot. And that's one great scene right there that sort of puts it all together. And it is about love, which is a nice thing to talk about around the holidays, I think, you know. So it's, it works for me.
Okay, Les?
This is a film that almost caused a divorce in my house.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy.
I can't stand this film.
See, it's good to have some disagreement on the panel.
My wife is crazy about this film. And, you know, between this and forcing me to watch HGTV, it's almost like cruelty, but we do watch it. In all honesty, there are segments of this I find.
Well, there's so many different competing sort of, or at least concurrent threads. You don't like any of them, or are there some that are tolerable?
The Emma Thompson part where
Alan Rickman, Emma Thompson.
Yeah, where that scene where she actually, it's very, very moving. The scene where she finds the present that he's bought, and she thinks it's for her, and she later finds out it's for another woman. That's a terrible scene. You have to buy Hugh Grant as the prime minister having a relationship if that fails. So, yeah, I mean, they're that the Rickman, the Rickman Thompson stuff is interesting.
Because Rickman's always great.
He's always great. I think. He's always great.
So is Emma Thompson always great.
Yeah, that's right. Emma Thompson.
And Hugh Grant is just playing the same character he plays in every film. It's just he happens to be prime minister.
He could be the prime minister of Canada right now.
He could
he
be.
Looks like right.
He looks like
him. I didn't even think about that. He does look like Justin Trudeau.
He looks like him.
Well, I'm glad to see some disagreement there. It's just, what was it, too saccharine?
Absolutely. It's saccharine. And just, I can't buy almost any of it. And maybe I don't have to in a romantic comedy. I mean, I agree that, you know, there are certain conventions of romantic comedies that you have to buy for it to work. And we could name almost any one. I mean, Richard Gere running away with a prostitute. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. But you have
happens to be the sweetest, wonderful girl in the
world. Yeah, right. Yeah, you have to, and not really a prostitute, mm-hmm. You know. You have to buy it for it to work. I can't buy this one.
Okay. Well, it's a little disagreement's okay with me here.
Sure.
Les Friedman and Jack Garner are talking about holiday films and some of the best, some of the worst of all time. Okay, so if that's among the worst list, what's the worst of all time, Les?
Oh, well, we were talking about it a little bit earlier. I hate to do this. I mean, I think we could get into the Fred Claus area.
And I don't even think these... I mean, like, that's an actual movie that was made, but boy.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was with Vince Vaughn. We could go to Christmas with the Cranks. We could go to... Bad Santa is kind of interesting. I wouldn't put it in the worst category. And there's early Dudley Moore as in a Santa Claus film. But, you know, I like Jack and I were talking before the program, you reach a certain point and you don't have to or want to go to see bad movies after a while.
I hate it when people, no offense, ask me about what the worst movies are, mm-hmm. because I go out of my way to forget them. And, and also now that I'm no longer a professional.
Now you don't have to see them at all.
I don't have to see them at all. I only see what I want to see. So I do tend to forget, you know, films like that. But yeah, I'm kind of serious and classical about Christmas movies. And that my favorites, I mean, there are two Christmas carols that I love. The favorite, almost everybody agrees universally that the best one was made in 1950, starred this actor named Alistair Sim. It's the best Christmas carol. There's also a good one made for TV years later, if you need things in color, for example. And that's George C. Scott as Ebenezer Scrooge. So I like those a lot. And can I plunge on with my obscure favorite, the one that nobody here is going to think of as a Christmas movie?
Sure.
It's made by the great Preston Sturges. And it's called Miracle at Morgan's Creek. And it's not only my favorite Christmas comedy, it is my favorite comedy of all time.
Really?
This would be in my top 10 films, even more than Someone Like It Hot, which is a classic. It's called The Miracle of Morgan's Creek. And it's a movie in which Preston Sturges thumbed his nose at the censors of the day by finding ways to adhere to what they want and yet being really out there otherwise. And, you know, you got to see it to understand what I'm saying, but it's really great. Eddie Bracken and Betty Hutton. And what's great about it is there is a miracle that occurs, in a way, and that miracle occurs on Christmas Eve. So it eventually becomes a Christmas movie, although people don't talk about it as a Christmas movie, but they should.
And they don't talk about Meet Me in St. Louis as a Christmas movie, and I think of it as a Christmas movie.
And it has one of the great Christmas songs.
Absolutely.
In it. You know, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is in that movie.
So this film, again, the name of the film, Jack?
The Miracle of Morgan's Creek.
Favorite comedy of all time.
Alert the presses.
That's right.
Wow, that is really
I laugh every time I see it. I love it. And they got the most incredible dialogue and characters. It's the lead girl in it, her name is Trudy Cockenlocker. And her father is the constable, played by the great William Demarest, who people may remember from My Three Sons. And it's and she goes to a party celebrating the boys going off to sea, I mean off to the war during World War II, and she becomes with child. And this is a time when you couldn't even say the word pregnant on screen. They had to sort of hem and haw around it. And I don't want to tell you anymore, except you're going to laugh like crazy.
Okay, so that's your favorite, and I assume your favorite Christmas or holiday movie of all time.
Yeah, although. I mean, I got to, again, be a little more traditional and probably go with the Alistair Sim Christmas Carol and Christmas Story as real Christmas. Now, I love this movie, and I'm playing games here a little bit by calling it a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. It is, but for 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Les, your favorite holiday film then?
Well, I think that a film that many people may not have seen because it's stop action animation, but The Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton's film, is, I think, a fabulous Christmas movie.
It meshes Halloween and Christmas in wonderful ways.
And I haven't seen it in years. Still enjoyable to watch.
Absolutely holds up. Absolutely.
You know, there's also talking about an obscurity. There's a film that Truman Capote wrote, two great short stories that have to do with holidays, Thanksgiving one and Christmas the other one. And they made-for-TV movies with the great Geraldine Page in the 50s, and they're hard to find on DVD. I think it's called A Christmas Memory, but I'm not sure that's the title. Something like, if you look up Truman Capote and General Geraldine Page, you'll find it. But if you can't get the disc, it is on YouTube. A lot of people don't realize that full-length movies
right.
are on YouTube, especially if they're either out of copyright or whoever has the copyright doesn't care. And it's on, it's because there are later versions that Hallmark TV made, which you want to avoid. But to go to the original with Geraldine Page, and Truman Capote does his own narration, which is wild.
Okay. Alistair sends us a note saying, isn't anyone going to carry a torch for It's a Wonderful Life?
I was just going to say that. How could we avoid It's a Wonderful Life and Miracle on 34th Street? I mean, those are the classics.
Especially Wonderful Life. I like that a little better than Miracle.
I do too. Yeah. I do too. And, you know, it's interesting. It's a Wonderful Life has an interesting history because it's made right after the war. Jimmy Stewart didn't know he was going to have a career after the war. Capra, everything was in disarray. And it actually, there are frightening parts of that film, nightmare aspects of that film that really, really work very well. So I mean, I know it's trite to say it, but I must say it works for me every time I see it.
And nightmares are part of the Christmas tradition, going back to Christmas
right.
Carol, which is full of nightmares. The thing about It's a Wonderful Life is that it was not a hit when it came out.
No.
People weren't in the mood for that. They weren't ready for it. And what happened was in the 60s, for some reason, somebody let the copyright fade, go. It went out of copyright. And so TV stations all around the land started playing the heck out of it. You couldn't turn around without It's a Wonderful Life being on TV. I think since then, somebody somehow, whatever they do to get the copyright back, it's happened. But for a while there, it was on TV so much, and then people said, hey, this is a classic. We got to do it. It's a tradition. Let's do it. And then it became a tradition.
That's right. That's right.
Adam writes to us, Scrooged, Bill Murray. I don't know. That was like in his weird period of kind of dud films, I thought, but I don't know. Maybe.
No, I'm not a big fan.
No, so. Me either.
Okay, so sorry, Adam. Wendy writes to us, can you ask your guests, in Shakespeare's time,
right.
comedy was defined as ending in at least one wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I think I see a trend where any family comedy ends in Christmas. Sometimes it seems gratuitous or even taking advantage of the holiday. Thoughts?
Well, I don't think the comedies we're talking about this year, like Trainwreck and Sisters, I haven't seen them.
No, that's one of the things we were talking about earlier in terms of comedy and where it's going. If this year has proved anything, it's proved that women can be as gross as men. I mean, certainly Trainwreck, and I haven't seen Sisters. I've only seen the trailer for it that's
which
out.
Looks very raunchy.
Yeah, it looks very raunchy, and Melissa McCarthy is like the reigning queen, and Rebel Wilson, the reigning queen of comedy, and so it is interesting to watch these female comedies come and really change the genre. Starting with Bridesmaid, of course, that's the film.
Well,
that
there was sort of an equal ground thing that happened there, which in some ways is weird ways is kind of admirable, I suppose.
Yes.
But you're right. There was a time when weddings were often the end of whatever it is. You know, all those comedies, romantic comedies, they would always end in a wedding or the prospect of one coming or whatever. But
yeah, Les, let me just ask you, just because you've had a chance to see a little bit more on the comedy side lately, Jack gets to be so picky and choosy, which is, you know, that's a great luxury to have.
I'm not picky and choosy.
Well,
I'm just the common man. Is that it?
so, but let me ask you about Trainwreck specifically, just
sure.
because before we get back to finish up on the holiday side. But I saw an interesting article earlier this year about, it was sort of a working hypothesis that Hollywood is changing the framework for romantic comedies, which used to be trite, predictable. Boy tries to get the girl, boy does something stupid, fixes it, happy in the end. And now it's much more, I think, egalitarian. Like you said, women can be. And so they pointed to a film like Trainwrecked. They've pointed to a film called Sleeping with Other People, which I didn't see. And the idea being that at least these films are maybe a little bit more true to life or more willing to defy convention. Is that happening or is that just...
Well, okay, I'm assuming now we can do a spoiler about Trainwreck.
Sure, go ahead.
It's been out enough. All right. I thought the ending of Trainwreck was an incredible cop-out.
Mm.
Did you see it?
I didn't.
Okay. At the end of it, she becomes a cheerleader to fulfill his kind of fantasy about what a woman should be. And while the whole rest of the film goes against conventions, as you're talking about, I mean, she's a mess in this film. And you keep wondering, well, you're not surprised she doesn't have a boyfriend in some ways. And there's a truly uncomfortable nudity scene with a well-built man in it. Very uncomfortable. Well, uncomfortable in the sense that we haven't seen it before, mm-hmm. not anything else. But at the end, it becomes a traditional comedy. And I thought that was really a cop-out. I don't know who imposed that on her. Or maybe she imposed it on herself.
And Amy Schumer, you'd think, would resist that.
You would think she would resist it. But I don't think she did resist it in this particular moment. But I think you know, it is interesting to see a kind of equality in this particular realm coming on. And, of course, the famous Jennifer Lawrence letter that caused quite a stir about the role of women in Hollywood behind the camera and her being paid less than Bradley Cooper and that whole controversy. I won't get into that, but that whole controversy playing itself out.
You know, I just think talking about women in film made me think of a film that we haven't talked about yet that's actually really, really very, very well done and people should think about it and maybe get it when it's on DVD or whatever, and that's Surrogate. I'm sorry, not Surrogate.
Suffragette.
Suffragette. Mm-hmm. Suffragette. Which is about the vote, you know, the women fighting for voting rights in England, which were different than here because they got a little more violent over there. They threw rocks, right. and it's really well done. Mulligan is really good in it. Carey Mulligan is the lead, and Meryl Streep's in it very briefly. But it's made by a woman, written by a woman, directed by a woman, stars a woman. So there are occasions that are not enough, but there's occasions. And we also had Mad Max this year with a strong female lead character.
And Brooklyn, we're talking about.
And Brooklyn is
as
about
we've
women,
talked
yeah,
about.
Yeah,
and, yeah. and you know, Amy Schumer. And
Room, course, Room is a female lead.
Room and Carol, mm-hmm. two female lead.
Right, double
who will
female.
Fight it out. I think both of them will be nominated for it.
Wayne writes to us and just says, I sure hope no one's ever tried to remake It's a Wonderful Life. I bet somebody did. They even tried to remake A Christmas Story or at least give it a sequel. What a mistake. I don't know. Have they ever tried to remake It's a Wonderful Life or give it a sequel?
I've never heard of A Wonderful Life, although there might be variations of it because it's kind of a theme. I've seen other movies over the years and said, well, there's a little bit of A Wonderful Life
right,
in there.
Right.
But in terms of outright redoing it, I don't think so.
I would hope not in this case.
Well, you're right. Stunned at what they remake.
And how quickly they'll remake. You know,
Bonnie and Clyde. Yeah.
Remake the bad movies.
You know, make them better.
I learned
from your mistakes.
And I have always said that. Why are you remaking good movies?
I know. Just, you know? Just rent the good one and watch it.
Yes,
you don't need to
remake. I felt that way about even like Footloose. I thought, well, maybe in the old days you would have thought, well, I can't see it. I have to go to Library of Congress to get it. Now you can go get it on Netflix streaming. Why would you watch a remake?
What a good point. Remake the bad ones. Learn from your mistakes.
Yeah.
Let's listen to one more clip, and we'll finish where we started, which is, for my money, the most enjoyable holiday to watch, which is A Christmas Story. This is Santa's lap scene.
What do you want for Christmas, little boy?
My mind had gone blank. Frantically, I tried to remember what it was I wanted. I was blowing it.
Come on, kid. How about a nice football?
Football? Football? What's a football? Without conscious will, my voice squeaked out.
Football. Okay, get him out of here.
A football? Oh, no. Okay, what was I doing? Wake up, stupid. Wake up. No.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
The scariest Santa ever with the best rejoinder to Ralphie's dreams. You'll shoot your eye out.
Yeah.
That's Gene Shepard narrating to it.
Yeah, that's Gene Shepard's voice. Yeah, that's the best.
That is the best. That is a great film.
All right, so let me just ask you, Jack and Les, what makes that film great? What do you love about that film?
the combination of outrageous comedy and nostalgia. I mean, I felt that there was sort of an aspect of it that was kind of my childhood. And he uses hyperbole, Gene Shepard, in his writing to a great extent in ways that are wonderful and very funny. I mean, that, for example, is a very extreme example of everybody being a little frightened when they go meet Santa Claus. But it's I just think, and it's got a nice cast, low budget little movie made by a guy who never made a really good movie otherwise, Bob Clark. He made Porky's.
He made Christmas Story?
Yes, the same guy. He's a Canadian filmmaker who this was somehow he just fell into a great film here.
Sure did. Les, what makes it great to you?
Well, you know, I think that it isn't my, I mean, I didn't grow up in that era, but what makes that work for me is that it is nostalgic without being syrupy. It never really just tilts over to the point where you're saying, oh, God, I just can't watch this anymore. And there's a kind of self-conscious humor about himself. He doesn't take himself seriously. He sees how ridiculous he was. And so you can identify with that because at some point in our lives, we all see how ridiculous we are.
Well, a lot of comments keep rolling in as we get ready to end the hour. John says, how about Die Hard, best Christmas movie? I guess it's a Christmas movie.
No, it takes place Christmas Eve, but you don't think of Christmas very much. But it's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
Okay. Eric says, It Happened One Christmas, a TV remake, 1977, with Marlo Thomas.
Sounds like melding Christmas with It Happened One Night, which is... strange idea.
That girl.
I've never heard of that one.
No.
Bob writes, how about the little-known 1954 Michael Curtis movie, We're No Angels, with Humphrey Bogart?
Michael Curtiz.
Oh, I'm so
glad. Yeah, no, that's okay. Michael Curtiz.
Guy made Casablanca, by the way.
Yeah, that, and many others.
Yeah, sorry, he's one of the hard-working directors.
Yeah.
That's a fun film, not a great one.
No, but it's really interesting film. Yeah.
We've covered a lot of ground this hour with our panelists, Les Friedman, a professor in the Media and Society program at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, all those things,
Thank
Les.
You.
Whatever it is we celebrate.
Whatever we celebrate.
To the very best of you.
No war on Christmas here.
We don't believe in war on anything.
No.
And Jack Garner, you can see his column on this in the Sunday Democrat and Chronicle. Probably be online before that, but he's talking about best films of the year. Coming up on Sunday.
That's right.
Jack, thank you. Great to have you here.
Always fun.
Merry, everyone. Thank you, John Andrus, our engineer for the program, and Megan Mack is the producer. We've got another program tomorrow. I will talk with you Wednesday and hope you're having a wonderful week right here on Catch.